RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio. This morning I'm talking to Jennifer Margulis, an award-winning journalist and author whose work has appeared across the American media, predominantly publications like the New York Times and the Washington Post. But this morning she's all about us and her first appearance on Reality Check Radio, and she's here to talk to us about fertility. Welcome to Reality Check Radio, Jennifer Margulis.
Thank you so much for having me, Alistair.
Okay, so first up, for people that don't know you, can you give us a brief rundown on your background and what's led you to this particular topic, this topic of fertility?
Sure. So I am an investigative health journalist and I write books. I've written or co-written 8 books. And like you said in your introduction, I've written for hundreds of media outlets in the United States, and I've written for the most liberal and, Alistair, the most conservative. So the right-wingers can hate me for writing for the liberal media, and the liberal media can hate me for writing for the right wing. But what I think that speaks to is that I'm fascinated by human health. I'm fascinated by biology and chemistry and science, and I'm also really interested in medical malfeasance, and I follow where the story goes, and sometimes stories go in very unexpected places.
Okay, so let's talk about your recent Substack article titled Shooting Blanks. And if anyone wants to read it or wants to read more of Jennifer's work, you can find that on Substack by searching for Jennifer's name. That's Jennifer Margulis, Margulis. But in the Shooting Blanks article, you write that fertility rates in the US and around the world are plummeting. We're seeing that here in New Zealand as well. In fact, you point out some research that's been published in The Lancet. There's a prediction that by the year 2100, 97% of countries will have a fertility rate below the necessary threshold to sustain human populations. And that's when you ask the question, and that's why we've got you on today. What in the heckity heck is happening is what you write. So what is happening, Jennifer?
Yeah, well, so we know that the birth rate has gone down in so many countries. Not only, this is interesting, Alistair, in first world countries, but also in developing countries. And usually we see that, you know, that industrialized countries will have falling birth rates, but the developing countries will continue to have increasing birth rates. And that doesn't seem to be the trend anymore. So when I first started researching issues about pregnancy, childbirth, and the first year of a baby's life, the United States, we were having about 4 million births a year. And that was, and today it's the birth rate has gone so far down, it's like in the 3 million something, and it continues to drop. So we have to ask the question, what's going on? And, you know, we can have a long conversation about this, but because it's multifaceted. So for example, in Italy, my husband is Italian American, and we have a lot of friends in Italy. A lot of young people in Italy are choosing simply not to have children. And this is a country where people absolutely love babies. Like if you walk into a bakery with a child, the baker will come out and hand the child a cookie or a croissant or something to eat. Like the Italians are just so about the bambini. But young people feel like because of all the economic problems that they're facing, many, many, many of them cannot afford to live, you know, anywhere but with their parents. They aren't finding good jobs. Like they just feel like they don't want to have children, right? So that is one factor that I think we're also seeing in the United States. I don't know if people in New Zealand feel like that too, but the economics have gotten so difficult. So I know that every time I go to the grocery store, I feel like I'm shopping for Christmas dinner because the amount of money that I'm paying just for very simple food, actually, it's organic and we can talk about that later. But so that is more expensive, but it's like the equivalent of what I would have spent on some super fancy meal. So that's one issue is that young people are feeling the economic pinch. They're also feeling tremendous amounts of despair. And that's coming out of the COVID lockups. People like to call them lockdowns, but I think they were actually lockups, right? And so that think about how that affected these young adults, and they think, oh my gosh, why would we bring a child into the world in this day and age when they feel hopeless, they feel depressed, they feel despairing.
There's also a lot of the stress as well, right? I lived in Asia for a long time, and the amount of stress in those countries just lead to a dearth of births, so to speak, don't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's a perfect segue into what I was going to say, because stress is also has an effect on your endocrine system. We think about stress as a toxin. It's actually so toxic to the human immune system and to human reproductive organs. So it's interesting. In Japan, the numbers are in my article, but, you know, so many people in their 30s, like more than a quarter of 30-year-old Japanese people are still virgins. And that's not because, I know, isn't that incredible? I don't believe that's because it's a very, you know, conservative, like anti-sex society at all. I think that what's happening there is that people are feeling shy. They don't know how to relate to people of the opposite sex. They're getting their sexual fulfillment through the internet and pornography and virtual reality. So if you can sit at home with a headset on your face and go to a party without ever leaving the, you know, your bedroom, then you don't ever have the opportunity to actually be in contact with people. And, you know, humans are very motivated and they're desperate for their health. They need to be in human contact. We need to actually have active touching, Alistair. And that's something that they're just not doing. A lot of young people aren't doing, but especially in places like Japan. But what I was going to say was that the really big issue here is infertility. So it's not just that people are choosing not to have children. It's that so many people desperately want to have children and they're not able to get pregnant. And then we have to figure out, or then if they do get pregnant, they don't have viable pregnancies and they end up having miscarriages. So the question is, what is causing the infertility and why are so many people having miscarriages now and losing their babies and having problems with, you know, primary infertility and secondary infertility?
Because it's a booming industry as well too, right? The whole fertility industry, the IVF treatments and all of that kind of stuff. So what is it? Where's the infertility problem actually coming from?
Well, so that's an excellent question. And one of the places to look is in some of the most recent scientific publications. And I wrote in my Substack, Shooting Blanks, about a new science, brand new science that just came out that shows that in men expose to glyphosate. And I don't know if your listeners know the word glyphosate, but glyphosate is the main ingredient in Roundup. So it's a extremely potent herbicide. And what they found, these researchers in France studied, I think it was about 170 men who are infertile, and they looked at their blood and they looked at their semen, and they found that presence of glyphosate was something like four times higher in these infertile men's semen than it was in their blood plasma. And the reason why that's important is that we have known now for years, Alistair, that glyphosate is associated with massive reproductive harm in all sorts of animal studies. We've seen that in studies of cattle and pigs and rats and mice. And now we've also seen it to a lesser degree, just because humans aren't studied as much, but that glyphosate has an effect on human infertility or fertility as well. So what the problem is that we are polluting the heck out of our planet. And that means that we are polluting ourselves. And, you know, the manufacturers of glyphosate, of Roundup, which is ubiquitous, it's used unbelievably often. It's the most common herbicide in the United States. You know, say that it's benign, that it doesn't harm human health. That's absolutely not true. And we literally have hundreds of studies saying otherwise.
So we're talking about Roundup, which is, haven't they just recently been found, the makers of Roundup, Bayer, have just been the subject of a multi-billion dollar judgment against them because of the science that is coming out about Roundup?
Yes. I mean, there have been several multi-million dollar settlements over the years. And especially, we know pretty much, I would say, without a shadow of a doubt, that glyphosate exposure causes non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So we know that glyphosate is a carcinogen. And that's one of the places where we've done class action lawsuits. It was actually against Monsanto. And then Monsanto, my understanding is that Monsanto then sold their product Roundup to Bayer. And they have been saying in the United States that they're going to phase it out, but they have, and they're phasing it out for residential use. Well, if glyphosate is, which is a total lie, by the way. So I rent a place in the United States that's part of what we call HOA, Homeowners Organization Association. I don't know if you have those in New Zealand, but they're like these little cookie cutter places. And they are spraying the heck out of the lawn. So that's not residential use. I don't know what is. And every single week I go out there and say, please stop, stop, no spraying, no spraying. But they're doing it anyway. So this idea that somehow we're being more careful with this absolutely toxic, perniciously toxic product is simply not true. These are chemicals, by the way, that have been banned in Europe. Atrazine was banned in Europe since, I think, the early 2000s. And it's the second most common chemical that we're spraying on our crops. And what's really, really worrisome out there is that you see this at every level of the ecosystem. So let's say that you're spraying the grass and then the cows are eating that grass. And then we're taking those cows and we're actually using bovine proteins in other products like vaccines. So all of a sudden, we're seeing that when we tested the childhood vaccines in the United States, we found evidence of glyphosate inside the vaccines that we were then injecting intramuscularly into newborn babies. And so what you have to understand about this is you can say, oh, well, I try to eat organic, or I'm not so worried about that. It doesn't seem like a big deal. But the truth is that it's ubiquitous and it's poisonous and it really is definitive. But these chemical companies are so sophisticated, they're so smart, and they know how to muddy the waters. And so what they do is they pay scientists all the time to show the opposite, to show that it's benign, to show that it's not harmful, and they ignore all of the scientific studies. And I'm literally, we have hundreds, if not over 1,000 studies showing these problems with glyphosate and atrazine. And then the companies that make them say that, oh, it's not human. The studies are badly done. And they do these campaigns that are very targeted to oust scientists from the establishment who say otherwise, to make them look like quacks, to own the SEO, the search engine optimization. So that, for example, this your listeners can find also on my Substack that I wrote about a microbiologist named Tyrone Hayes, and he was hired by a Swiss company to show that their product atrazine was not was not causing reproductive harm. Well, he found the opposite. He found that it was feminizing frogs. He called it chemical castration, and they went after him with a vengeance. And when they went after this, he's at University of California at Berkeley. He is an incredible microbiologist. When they went after him, he started noticing that he was hearing clicks on his phone. He was seeing people sitting in the back of the audience when he would give public talks. And it turned out, so then there was a lawsuit. And in the course of two different lawsuits during discovery, because people were like, oh, you're being crazy, that's not true. Like his colleagues, his friends, his family. And it turns out that everything that he had said was happening was actually happening. And we got the notes from the chemical company that said that they were going to do a targeted campaign to discredit him. And if they could discredit his reputation as a scientist, then nobody would pay attention to the science that was definitive showing that these chemicals cause harm. And the saddest thing is that Tyrone Hayes has been vindicated, meaning we know that everything that he did was on the up and up, and that he was really David up against Goliath. But we're still using this chemical in the United States. We're still using glyphosate in the United States. So we're winning the wars, we're winning the battles, but we're losing the war.
So is this an agenda, or is this just greed gone mad?
Well, that's an interesting question. A lot of my readers would say that it's an agenda. And I believe that humans, I always want to see the best in people. I just want to. And I'm steadfastly optimistic, even in the face of information to the contrary. So I think that greed is an such a powerful motivator. And when you look at so many of the things that happen in the medical industry, especially around issues of fertility, pregnancy, childbirth, you see that often it is dictated by greed gone mad. And I think that there's something else too. So I don't want to see some kind of pernicious agenda. I just am not, and I'm not, it's not that I'm not open to that being the case, but I don't know what to do with that. Like, I have this one wonderful, beautiful, vibrant life to live. And if everything is against me, I would just want to crawl into a hole. But what I do see is that, you know, people will convince themselves and they truly believe that what they're saying is right. So they will convince themselves that something that we know is bad is good. And could I give you an example?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so infant quote unquote formula. So just to step back for a second, human babies should drink human baby milk. Baby cows drink cow milk. Baby sheep drink sheep milk. You know, ewe milk, I guess it's called. You know, baby goats drink goat milk. Human babies need to drink human milk. And one of the most incredible experiences in any woman or even any couple's life is breastfeeding. That doesn't mean, because it's unbelievable. Your whole body after you give birth to a baby is programmed to feed that baby and protect that baby. And that's something that the men can get involved with too. It's absolutely beautiful thing when a mom and a baby get to nurse. But nobody makes any money off of women being successfully breastfeeding their babies. So in the United States, the infant formula companies do absolutely everything they can to derail a woman's ability to breastfeed, including offering help hotlines. So if you need help with breastfeeding, it's the middle of the night, you're hormonal, your breasts are leaking. Forgive me for being so, you know, like graphic about it, but
that's okay.
You're still bleeding because you just had a baby. You're crying. You want to call a 1-800 helpline. You're going to end up talking to someone who is actually trying to get you to stop breastfeeding and use infant baby formula, which then they're going to tell you is just like breast milk. Well, it absolutely is not. I have looked at human breast milk under a microscope, and I have looked at infant formula under a microscope. Infant formula is dead. It's filler. It's like feeding to fatten a baby. Human breast milk is teeming with life and, you know, nutrients and immune enhancers, but you don't make any money. Boobs are bad for business. I went to Illinois and I went to Abbott Nutrition, which is one of the big makers of infant formula. And I talked to the representative there until he closed the door, slammed the door on me. But I very friendly. And I said, listen, I just really want your point of view. And I was doing research for a chapter of a book on infant formula. And the book is called Your Baby, Your Way. And I went and talked to him and he was so excited because he was about to, very well-dressed, very polite man. He was about to go to Brazil to sell his product. Hooray. They're doing so incredibly well with their return on investment. They're selling so much infant formula. And what you have to understand is every time they derail a mom from breastfeeding, whether it's a Brazilian mom, a New Zealander, or an American, they are looking at their profit margins going up and up and up and up and up. But this man believed that he was doing some kind of good for the world, because you can't really wake up in the morning and look in the mirror if you don't think that what you're doing is good for the world. So I was using that as an example about how we people inside the industry tend to brainwash themselves into thinking that what they're doing is right, even though it's the opposite.
Okay, getting back to the fertility question and also going back to that Lancet study, one of the co-authors of that Lancet study we spoke about at the top, Dr. Natalia Bataji, said that declining fertility rates will completely reconfigure the global economy and the international balance of power and will necessitate reorganizing societies. That's her quote. This is actually a major problem, isn't it? I mean, we seem to be focusing as a society on saving the planet right now and climate change and all of these alarmist things. But actually, this whole fertility question, this topic that we're talking about today, this is an existential problem for humans that is actually real, isn't it?
Absolutely. What's really interesting is that if you are a microbiologist or a chemist, you don't necessarily care so much about human life. So my mother was an evolutionary microbiologist, and she used to say that she thought that we humans might actually pollute ourselves out of existence. And the thing is, like that, so we have a We have a historical record of that because cyanobacteria were these bacteria that could not exist in the presence of oxygen, but oxygen was one of their waste products. And so they started excreting oxygen, and that was how life began to change, because then the bacteria had to adapt to being in an oxygen-rich environment. And so the cyanobacteria didn't die off completely, but they really, really lost out because of their own waste product. And my mom used to say that humans were on that train of polluting themselves out of existence. And because my mother was a microbiologist who loved bacteria, loved protists, loved fungi, all that stuff, she didn't think this was a problem. Now, I'm the opposite. I tend to be quite fond of humans. I love human society. And this is part of why I refuse to say that there's a, you know, global agenda to kill us all. I just don't want to see the world that way. That's not the lens that I look through. But I don't want humans to pollute themselves out of existence. You know, I want us to live in a healthy, happy, vibrant environment. And we, meaning for-profit medicine, corporations, corporate greed seem to be really bent on poisoning ourselves. And that is what I think we should be concentrating on, how these chemical companies, these infant formula companies, big medicine, the pharmaceutical industry, how they're actually, they want to keep us fat, sick, and nearly dead. They don't necessarily want to kill us because then they don't have a consumer anymore, but they definitely want us to be nearly dead.
Okay. You mentioned pharmaceutical companies. This is the elephant in the room. How much do those vaccines or those injections are part of the fertility question as well?
I think there's no question that the mRNA vaccines are causing massive disruptions in fertility. So we have a system in the United States, VAERS, which your listeners are probably familiar with. You know, that system is notorious for underreporting. And even underreported, we have over 5,130 miscarriages that have been reported as a direct result of the vaccines. And then, of course, up till now, we have in the CDC, there's been nearly 40,000 deaths from these vaccines. So obviously, when young people die before they reproduce, that contributes to the infertility.
But we also know that the spike protein gathers in the ovaries and in the testes, don't we?
Yes, yes. And there's something else, which is that the synergistic exposure to toxins. So in another book that I co-wrote with a doctor based in Portland, Paul Thomas, that book is called The Vaccine Friendly Plan, and don't be put off by the title. Our first chapter of that book is called Toxins, Toxins, Toxins. And the reason why is because if your body, you know, we're always going to be exposed to toxins. Earlier, I said stress was a toxin. The issue is not necessarily exposure. The issue is also how well your body can detoxify. So how well you are able to get those poisons out of your system. If you cannot detoxify, you are not going to be able to reproduce. And one of the biggest concerns that I have is that when you take something like glyphosate, the main ingredient in Roundup, and then you have mRNA vaccines, and then you have something else, which I don't know if this is on your radar or on your listeners' radar, but you have the problem of acetaminophen, which you call paracetamol, I think, in New Zealand, Tylenol, the main ingredient Tylenol. You take those three things, you put them together, and you have kind of a perfect storm that is disrupting your endocrine system, disrupting the balance, your hormones, disrupting your fertility. Because something that people need to realize in the United States, doctors are so ignorant of the science about this, but we know that Tylenol can be devastating to the developing infant brain. So when a child is given oxidative stress, and that could be in the form of a disease or a vaccine, for example. And now, of course, we're recommending these mRNA vaccines for children in the United States. It's unbelievable. The doctor will say, take some Tylenol. Well, taking Tylenol or paracetamol is the absolute worst thing you can do, because what it does is it depletes the body of something called glutathione. And glutathione, which is made in the liver, is, think of it as nature's mop. It's the thing that takes the toxins out of the body. So if you give a child a vaccine and then you give them a medication that actually inhibits their ability to take the toxins from the vaccine out of their body, you are essentially causing these terrible problems. And what we know that acetaminophen is a causative factor in neurological problems and a causative factor in, especially in asthma. So it can cause lung damage, it can cause brain damage. And, you know, it amplifies everything. So it amplifies glyphosate. If you're exposed to glyphosate and you can get it out of your body, you're okay. If you're exposed to glyphosate and then you're also taking Tylenol, you're sequestering it in your body and you're causing massive disruption.
So what can we do in raising our kids? And also, what can we do for family members who are actually wanting to raise a family? What are those things that we can do? And maybe also, if you could mention the books that you've written so that people know where to find those.
Yes. Well, so the bad news is that we're surrounded by toxins. The other bad news is that bees, for example, don't know about property lines. So if you have a certified organic farm next door to your certified organic farm, if your next neighbor who's 50 acres away or something doesn't, the bees are going around and they don't know where one person's property starts and the other ends, which is why, unfortunately, and I'm not going to be gloomy and doomy, I promise, but something like 97% of honey, organic honey, tested positive for glyphosate. And the reason why was what I just said, is that the bees don't know, right? So that's the bad news. But the good news is there's so much that we can do to empower ourselves and to get rid of the toxic chemicals that are destroying our lives. And we could do a whole other show about this, but it's extremely important to eat organic. It's really the most important thing, even though a lot of times, at least in the United States, it's very hard to afford because it tends to be more expensive. And people tend to think, well, that doesn't really make a difference. I don't care if it's certified organic. If you know a farmer and you know what their practices are, you can talk to a farmer. You can get a lot less expensive food if you do it that way. But you shouldn't be eating junk. You shouldn't be eating highly processed foods. You should be eating plants and animals that lived as nature intended. And the more natural, the better. Like wildcrafted plants are actually full of nutrients. The other thing is that we talked about a little bit about detoxifying. Well, there's lots of ways to detoxify. And one of the best is to sweat. So you've got to do exercise. I don't care what your exercise, it could be lovemaking if that's your exercise of choice, mutually consensual, of course. It can be going for a brisk walk if you're, you know, mobility impaired. It can be doing weights at home, sitting down. You're not in competition with anybody else. You don't have to be an athlete. You don't have to look mad fit, as my 14-year-old would say, but you have to sweat. If you sweat every single day, you're going to help get those toxins out. And then I'll just say a couple of things that it's really important to avoid. Never, again, not a single listener today, this morning, should ever take paracetamol again. If you have it in your cupboard, go ahead and throw it in the trash. Don't ever let a doctor recommend it for your child. And that doctor who recommends it, you take your feet and you walk out of their office and never go back, because it means that they're not paying attention to the most important science. So I want everyone to try to avoid acetaminophen as much as they possibly can, which is meaning never take it again. And also, if we can avoid antibiotics, which a lot of times in the United States, they are so overprescribed. And the good news is there's a lot of really easy, natural ways to deal with things like ear infections. You know, your baby might end up having an ear infection at some point, although they don't need to, and they don't ever need to have a diaper rash if you do things differently. You do not need to use antibiotics to treat that ear infection or that rash or whatever it is. If somebody is telling you that you need an antibiotic, you can ask for natural alternatives. So if we can just avoid those two things, and then the third one I'll say, which is going to be harder for some people, is stop the sugar. Don't eat any more sugar, because sugar is a crop that is laden with herbicides in it. And it's almost always GMO. If it's not certified organic, even if it is, you don't know if it's going to be tainted. But refined sugar is just bad for your body. So if you are hungry and you have a sweet tooth, get those blueberries, get those strawberries, get those dates, it's not that eating sweets is bad. It's that eating processed sugar and processed foods is like just feeding yourself with poison.
Well, that's an incredible list. Thank you so much. And also, thank you very much for your time this morning, Jennifer. It's been an absolute pleasure listening to you. And let's hope that we can get you to New Zealand at some point to spread this message further.
Absolutely. I would love to come and see you all.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public, free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.